Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hello, Stephen. Welcome back to Europe. How was your trip?
My trip was fantastic, Ed. Unfortunately, I didn't seem to be able to change the election results, and we got something that maybe you and I didn't want, but it was a fantastic trip. Lots of fun and lots of maps that I spotted on the way, which people who follow us on Mappery will be seeing over the next few weeks. And what about you? How are you doing?
Very nice. I myself have also been on a trip. We're going to talk about my recent trip to the Netherlands, where I took part in the very first GeoMob Netherlands, which was great. That's the main focus of this episode. I think we have a few other bits of mapping discussion to cover as well.
Just made me think, you know, that I was in, amongst other places, I was in New York City, and we don't have any GeoMob events in North America.
Well, you know what? This came up, actually, when I was in the Netherlands, because people afterwards were like, why don't you do it in Paris, or why don't you do it in, you know, in the U.S. or something? And it's not me doing it, Stephen. It's not up to me. It's we need a local volunteer. We need someone locally to take the lead and do the organizing and get the venue. And so, dear listener, if that's you, let's go.
Yeah, and here's a call. Is it going to be Paris or is it going to be New York, who is the next city for GeoMob? It's up to you.
Well, it could be someone else entirely.
It could be somewhere else. It could be Mumbai. It could be... Anyway, enough. Yeah. So you're back from the Netherlands. I'm back from the States. And what's happening?
Let's
start with the Netherlands event.
Let's start with the Netherlands. It was a couple weeks ago now. We haven't, because of your trip, we weren't able to record shortly after. But very, very nice event. It was in the beautiful city of Utrecht, which that was very nice because it's my first time ever in Utrecht. And my kids had fall break, so the kids were along on the journey. They did not come to GeoMob, but they were along on the trip, and we explored Utrecht. Big thanks to our local organizers there, Melissa and Dirk, who are at a thing called Novi, which is a kind of a technical. I'm not sure what the exact English language translation would be, but kind of a technical school, like a higher education institute that focuses on kind of technology stuff. And so they work there, and Dirk obviously in the geography or GIS kind of section, and so they hosted the event. A very nice venue. We had a good turnout. We probably had about 30, 40 people.
Good start.
Some people who I knew from people came from Belgium who I had seen at GeoMob Belgium. Others there were some who had actually made the trip to Barcelona in the past. And of course many people who I didn't yet know. So it was nice. It was good. We had, I was one of the speakers. I opened up the speaking, kind of giving an overview of our experience with GeoMob over the last 15 years and what GeoMob is and why and how we've done GeoMob. Then we had, who do we have? JP Menz, who has also spoken, he's been on the podcast before, also has spoken in Berlin about OwnTrax, this kind of privacy-focused location tracking software, open source software. We had Petra, who is a woman who works in Utrecht, talking about spatial correlation. We had Edward Betts, who is... I mean, I don't know how else to say it, but he is a bit of a GeoMob groupie, Stephen, in that he lives in Bristol, I believe, and so he comes to London frequently, but he's also made the trip to Edinburgh quite a few times, and then he's spoken in Barcelona earlier this year, and now he spoke also in Netherlands. So about the connection between... he's built a tool to connect, make it easier to add Wikidata tags to OpenStreetMap.
Okay, that's pretty geeky.
Wait, hang on. I'm blanking on one of our other speakers. We had another speaker who he spoke about. He had also previously spoken in Belgium about the 330-300 rule, which wait. Hang on. This is shameful. This is it that I'm wait. I'm looking
it up.
What on
earth is the 330-300 rule?
The 330 Leonardo, of course. The 330-300 rule is a kind of an urban planning. I don't know if it's a rule or a guideline that they use. Is the idea is that in I believe in Belgium it is. I'm not sure if it's Belgium or the Netherlands, but or both. But the idea is that from every house you should be able to see three trees. The 30% of land cover should be vegetation, and at most you should have to walk 300 meters to a green space.
Okay.
And so, you know, given these rules, you can then build maps to try to see where are we meeting the target and where are we not meeting the target, and thus help cities better know how to use their budget of, you know, say they have a budget of X amount for planting trees. The question is, where should they plant the trees? So where can you to get the most bang for the buck?
Right.
So, anyway, it was great. It was a good event. And afterwards, we hung out, had some beers, had a very interesting discussion. I see no reason that GeoMob should not thrive in Utrecht and the Netherlands. Several people asked about Amsterdam, whether we could do an event in Amsterdam, to which I said no, but you can do an event in Amsterdam.
Right.
And so we'll see if anything comes of that. And actually, Stephen, we are recording right now on the 18th, so this episode won't go live for a week or so, but tomorrow is, of course, GeoMob Belgium, the next GeoMob Belgium, so good luck to them. I have seen the sign-up list. It's quite a good turnout, so I think it should be a good event.
Fantastic. I mean, we've really grown the spread of the events in the last year, 18 months, you know, because we've got Finland, we've got Edinburgh, we've got Belgium and now Netherlands.
On Berlin.
Top of, yeah, but Berlin was a regular.
Yes,
I'm talking about the new cities.
The new ones.
So, you know, it's a pretty, you know, it is growing. And it looks like certainly the Belgians are now coming up for what, their third event?
They're coming up with the what event?
Their third event.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
Their third event.
No, this is the second. Only the second.
Only the second. Okay. All right. So yeah, it's very good. And we've also got lineups for Edinburgh and London coming
together.
The
lineups are now becoming clear in Edinburgh and in London. And for those of you that enjoy Geo podcasts, which would explain why you're listening to this podcast, I can reveal now that at our next London event, one of the speakers will, of course, be Max Lenormand.
Oh, great.
Minds Behind Maps, although his talk will not be about that podcast. It will be about his day job.
Right.
So, but nevertheless, he'll be there, and you can meet a geo-broadcasting celebrity in person. So I had the pleasure of meeting up. He, of course, lives in the Netherlands, and I had the pleasure of meeting up with him in Amsterdam after the Utrecht event.
Right. Okay.
We hung out for a bit. So
that will be fun. Okay. And in Edinburgh, anybody that you want to mention, or just that the list is...
Well, I'm going to be speaking, Stephen, of course.
In Edinburgh?
In Edinburgh, I'm going to be speaking. But then we also have two other speakers already lined up, and I think more will be added. But Gregory Marler,
right,
who I think every OpenStreetMapper will probably know. He's been very active in the project for over a decade now. So...
Nearly 20, more than over a decade.
Yeah, which is mildly horrifying how the time flies.
Yeah.
So, you know what, with Gregory, he had a blog, and maybe he still has this blog, I don't know, but it was called something like, he went to the university in Durham as a student, And this is when GeoMob just OpenStreetMap just started. And so he started mapping Durham. And I think he had a blog called Here Be Dragons or something like that about his mapping in Durham. And my company in London, I remember we sponsored it for a while. That was how I first met him. But I think that must have been, I don't know, 2007 or something.
Something like that.
So it is a bit frightening how the years slip by. But and then we have Nick Sutton, who will be speaking about something called emergency locate, location data and the emergency services. So should also be a very good talk. But I don't think the lineup is complete yet. Obviously, we still have 2 months to go. So I think hopefully we'll get one or two more.
And just thinking about Greg for a second, you know, and something like 17 years of contributing to OpenStreetMap. And then there are a number of others in the UK that we both know, you know, Andy and Harry and the guys on the tech stack and all of that. They've defied my predictions, which were that, you know, people would, you know, they'd grow up, they'd get married, they'd have children, and all of those things would take precedence over OpenStreetMap. And in fact, you've got all of these people who are now coming up to close on 20 years of contributing to the project and are still significant contributors.
Yeah, well, you know, life comes in ebbs and flows, I think. So you know, sometimes you do more and sometimes you do less, but... One of the things that's so amazing about OpenStreetMap is there's always more to do. So you can, you know, if you feel like doing a lot, you can do a lot. If you feel like doing a little, you can do a little. And you can, no matter where you go, no matter where you live, there's something to do. You know, maybe you do it just when you're on holiday. Maybe you do it day to day. Maybe as you're walking around, riding a bike around, whatever. But there's always something to do. So.
Yep.
And so it's a good hobby. It's also a good hobby, I have to say, together with kids. You know, obviously once they're of a certain age, but actually even if they're young though, they got to get the kids out of the house. So you can map while they're playing or whatever. But
I remember taking my kids on sort of walks out in the open and mapping footpaths with them and them being absolutely fascinated with the idea that we were walking and we were mapping. And it was pretty clunky in those days, you know, because you had to stop and put a point in and all of that. It wasn't super slick. But then when we got home, you know, by the time we got home and uploaded it, and then they could see it on the map. And they, you know, I mean, I'm talking about when they were sub 10, you know, they were little ones, and they thought it was really cool even then. So
that is cool. My own son has not expressed a similar joy or desire of it, but, you know, let's see. Maybe I'll have to try again in the near future, get him out.
Well, the other thing that gets kids interested, or certainly got one of my kids interested, was I don't think it was Haiti. I think it was one of the
humanitarian responses.
The other subsequent humanitarian responses, and we did couch mapping.
Okay,
and. Once she got the hang of it, she became absolutely obsessed for a while with couch mapping.
All right.
Because, you know, it was a way of just whiling time away. It's quite therapeutic, isn't it?
You know, Stephen, it's very good that you mentioned that because I completely forgot to add this point to our agenda. But there is, so as you may recall, every year as we head into the holidays at OpenCage, we do a donation to HOT.
Yeah.
And we did that again this year. And this year they are doing a big fundraiser, which our donation will be a contribution to. But it's taking place on the 4th of December. And it's going to be what they're calling a global mapathon. And I think it's like a 24-hour live mapathon in the sense that, of course, people can map, but there's also going to be like a video stream.
Right.
Where different people are going to be able to speak. And I'm going to do a brief session where I'm going to talk about things, about, you know, why we were motivated to give our donation. And it's to be honest, obviously one of the main reasons is, of course, that our service depends on OpenStreetMap, and thus we want to get back to the OpenStreetMap ecosystem. But I think in my talk, what I'm mainly going to focus on is how the availability of OpenStreetMap for free enables so much geo-innovation that we've seen over the years at GeoMob, and try to come with examples from that. So
cool.
Anyway, we'll put a link in the show notes if anyone wants to get involved with the Mapathon, or of course, perhaps donate. I'm sure it would be very appreciated.
And whilst we're on the OpenStreetMap theme, which seems to have been where we've wandered this morning, Mark Tobias posted a link to an article about Grab in Southeast Asia, which I thought was really interesting. And I know it's not sort of hot news that Grab have been using their delivery drivers to contribute to OpenStreetMap, but I still thought it was interesting that Grab's are sort of... what is Grab? Describe it, Ed, can you?
It's like a Deliveroo, or in Barcelona there's Glovo, or Delivery Hero type brand. I mean, so basically you can order things and people come and deliver them to you. Primarily food, of course, but I don't know Grab specifically, but most of these started with food and then expanded into other categories.
Right.
And it becomes kind of anything.
So they claim to have 5 million drivers available across Southeast Asia, which sounds pretty colossal. I mean, that's Deliveroo on steroids to me. But they're switching from Google Maps to contributing to OpenStreetMap. And, you know, they talk about the fact that it's very difficult to get corrections to Google. And they give us an example. I think it's South Jakarta, where... Right. South Jakarta's lots of tiny alleyways. You know, they're cycle and motorbike routes. They're not car routes. And Google apparently didn't have all of them, or didn't have any of them. And they've been creating these. Which, you know, I mean, that's another example of a company making major contributions to OpenStreetMap, but also getting enormous benefit from OpenStreetMap.
Well, what's interesting, Stephen, is that not just that they're, of course, feeding back to OpenStreetMap and getting the benefit of it, but now they're then offering their own maps as well to other third parties, so which are based on that data.
And presumably optimized for language and other things, I'm guessing.
I would assume so. I mean, obviously, I don't live in Southeast Asia, and so I haven't had the experience of using it, but... But you know what's even more interesting, Stephen? At our last London event, which was the OpenStreetMap 20th celebration, you know, a lot of old timers from across the UK, OpenStreetMap old timers, kind of showed up, as you talked about, kind of the first generation that continues to come on. And one of the attendees was someone I had not seen in quite some time, Matt Amos, who has been involved since the very, very earliest days. And he now, he's based in the UK, but he works for Grab.
Right.
So,
I mean, in itself, you know, that's another story about a company gradually adopting OpenStreetMap and maybe moving away from Google. And this isn't a Google bashing session, but the article went on to then talk about Alibaba and Baidu and other Southeast Asian companies that are either in the mapping business or are in the delivery business, who who are switching to producing their own maps. And I'm assuming that when they say producing their own maps, they're not reinventing the wheel completely from scratch. They're starting from OpenStreetMap and enhancing it, and quite hopefully at least contributing back to it.
I would assume so, yeah. I don't know. I mean, this, of course, raises the question, is have we, you know, is this a long-term threat to Google Maps as more and more people contribute in, as organizations like Overture also then make it easier to make use of that data? Will we see more and more companies use their own maps, or, you know, maybe use multiple different map providers. And really the map kind of becomes just an absolute commodity.
Well, I think it's already a commodity.
I mean, it is a commodity, yes, but well, you know what's not a commodity, which I can't speak for Grab because I don't live in Southeast Asia, but, you know, the POI layer is definitely not a commodity. that I would say Google continues to have the lead by far, at least in Europe and North America.
I think they've got an advantage that's going to be difficult to overturn in POIs, because if you're a business, you want your business to be found in Google searches.
Of course. So you need to, your first thing you do is update your data in Google Maps, of course.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's so easy to update your POI data in if you're a business owner. Why would you not do it? And that's going to give them probably the most current POI data that anybody else will collect. You know, if you're relying on people walking past a place and saying, oh, that's no longer a Starbucks, it's a Nero, right? There's a lag. If you're the owner of that coffee shop, you're going to want it appearing on the map for all of those searches that people are doing.
Yeah, I mean, Google has one other massive advantage, of course, and that's the Android.
Yeah.
You know, they're tracking every Android phone. So imagine you have, I don't know, the coffee shop, and it's always full, and then all of a sudden it's not full anymore at you know, the normal business hours. Then, you know, that's a pretty clear indicator that maybe the shop doesn't exist anymore or something like that. So, this is an area OpenStreetMap, you know, needs to catch up. And maybe via delivery drivers and things is part of the solution. But yeah, it's definitely an area Google still has the lead.
But it's also, I mean, it's more than just organizing the detectors, whether it's delivery drivers or something of the activity of the phone. You actually have to engineer that whole workflow into your POI layer. And that doesn't look like something that the OpenStreetMap community would want to do.
No, but I mean, there are people in the Overture coalition. I mean, Facebook, for example, they have a places database. I don't know. That remains to be seen. That's still to be done on the OpenStreetMap project. So as I said, there's always more to do, and perhaps a listener out there can pick up that torch and pick up the baton and take it to the next stage. So, what else do we have to discuss? I mean, I guess we're kind of heading into the tail end of the year here, into the holidays.
We're heading into the tail end of the year.
Things are starting to wind down a little bit.
Yes. Though I don't know that changes the news cycle. There will be stuff happening in geo. You know, someone will release something exciting that we'll want to talk about. But, I mean, maybe you don't do releases just before Christmas.
Well, I've seen several. There was some other news this week of this Norwegian company, Atlas, have you seen them, about raising a funding round. So I think it was 2 million euro or 2.5 million euro to basically, I mean, I have not played with the service yet, but kind of an Esri challenger. That's an exaggeration. I don't think they're trying to be all things that Esri is, but more like, you know, targeting certain niches, basically maybe more like a felt challenger in the sense of make it easy to make a map make the map that you want for your business or your event or whatever, and put it on your website and things like that. So a very limited subset, let's say, of GIS functionalities. So again, I have not played with it yet, so I don't know, but, it is interesting that that's a continual topic that keeps coming up, be it he had felt last year, in all this new one, Atlas. Of course, recently at GMA Barcelona, we had this one, I Know.
Oh, yes, I was just looking at that.
Which is the AI-based GIS system. And again, it's that's the wrong term to describe it, because they very explicitly say they're not trying to replace all GIS functionalities, but they're trying to peel off a specific subset of users of GIS systems and make it simpler for them, and thus, you know, establish a kind of foothold there. So maybe that'll be something to keep a watch on in 2025.
There's also the company whose name's escaped me just now that allows you to use natural language to construct SQL queries for Overture.
Oh, your Overture AI. Overpass no, AI thing or whatever.
Overture.
Yeah, I mean, there are more and more of them,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say that when you said that we're talking about the Esri contender and then rephrased it as a felt contender, I mean, It just occurred to me that there are so many small startups. You know, they're not in the $100 million range like Mapbox was or Carto. They're in the sort of $5 to $10 million range, and you know, they seem to flourish and vanish.
Well, that's of course the curse of taking funding from a venture capitalist, right? Is that once you do, the clock starts, and you're kind of on the treadmill, and you've got to, you know, you have your window of opportunity to get to some kind of profitability or to show, you know, to show numbers that would encourage another investor to invest. And if you don't, then, you know, just like on a treadmill, if you stop running, you're gonna exit stage left. So it's hard. Yeah. It's hard. But
yeah, and if you describe, you know, you described one of those companies as a felt, you know, you said first you said it was an Esri.
No.
A try at competing with Esri. And then you said, well, perhaps it's more like a competitor for felt. And, you know, this bit of peeling off is a competitive, you know, has become a competitive space of peeling off little bits of functionality. We'll see. Personally, I don't think the large users are going to respond particularly well to this very fragmented.
No, maybe not. But I guess maybe, obviously, you don't start day one by taking on, you know, day one is not that you call up the, you know, the biggest department in the government and tell them to switch. That's not going to happen, right? But you start, of course, with smaller companies that are more budget conscious or things like that, and you kind of find your niche. So, I mean, I guess the pro argument would be Esri's whole suite of tools, A, very expensive, B, very complex, especially if your needs are much more minimal.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, at the other end of the spectrum, of course, you have QGIS and open source tools, which are certainly very powerful, and but also very complex and require a great deal of knowledge of how to make the most of them. So I guess for most organizations, your options are either you pay a consultant, some sort of geospatial consultant who then does this for you because they have mastered that complexity. But if your needs are actually fairly simple, maybe you can use one of these lighter tools. And I think that is the case for many people. You don't need, you know, the super complex analysis. I don't know. I was in, another one last week. I was in Berlin and I met with Carson from Honeycomb Maps, which is another kind of data visualization tool. And, you know, it feels like he and that business are kind of finding their niche. So, you know, I think there are niches of people who just want a straightforward, simple solution and are willing to pay a reasonable price for it, and they don't want all the complexity of a full comprehensive GIS.
And MapIdea is one that's been going for a while now and certainly seems to have flourished.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess there are some niches. But if you ask me to bet on one of these being a significant irritant even to Esri, I'd be doubtful.
I think you're right. None of these are going to be the Esri killer. But, you know, they can be the irritant in the sense of causing customers to complain about the price and things like that. And maybe, you know, I mean, maybe could put price pressure on things. I don't know.
I remember foolishly predicting that Google were parking their tanks on Esri's lawn, and that proved to be wrong.
But Google then abandoned that kind of enterprise space, right, and moved fully to the just focusing on consumer.
Yeah.
So,
in fact, one wonders why Google ever entered that space.
Well, anyway, one to keep an eye on for 2025, and of course, very shortly we'll be doing our predictions episode, our look back on 2024 and predictions for 2025. So to wrap up
okay.
the year, so we'll get more of a debate out of that.
Okay.
Anything else, Stephen, or should we wrap it up there?
Let's wrap it up. Come on, we're babbling a bit.
Talk to you next time.
Talk to you next time. Bye.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.